Today is Monday, January 29th. We're going to work on blood typing and blood information.
Okay, so what's your comfort level with blood typing at this point? Say 1 to 10. 10 is most comfortable. 5. Anybody higher than 5 or 6? 7 or 8? Good, good. I want you to be like level 8 or better by the time you leave here today. So we're going to spend probably a little more than half the class going back through blood typing today.
I noticed a lot of your previous exams, for the first exam, had a lot of questions related to blood types and who can get what and all that.
Yeah, who has an antigen, who has the antibody, Why don't we just go back and talk about some basic terms. We'll go back and talk about Rh factor, just make sure we're clear on all that stuff. And then I do want to help you complete that chart that's on page 31. If anybody's already completed it, great. Then I just want to double check and make sure you got the right stuff on there. All right, so we talked about Rh and we talked about ABO blood groups a little bit in class last period. Let's talk about the ABO blood group for just a moment. That ABO blood group is based on a couple of antigens, just two. They're antigen A and antigen B. And what does it mean to be O? Yeah, you're a universal donor, right? And if you're O, do you have antigens A or B? You have no antigens, right? So right now we're not talking about Rh positive or Rh negative. We're just talking about what it means to be plain old O, okay? And so, yeah, O has no antigens. Now, the catch is that O actually carries a couple of antibodies. What antibodies might O carry? Yeah, they may carry an anti-A and an anti-B antibody. So in terms of getting whole blood, the entire blood from, say, an O person, the O itself carries no antigens, but what about the plasma?
Plasma contains the antibodies.
Plasma contains the antibodies, right. So there's a very small risk. You know, we talked about it being just something to tuck in the back of your mind and say this person carries the antibodies against A and B. But it's not a huge issue because there's a small population of these coming with that whole blood donation. Okay, so what about an AB person? What antigens do they carry? A and B, yes. So AB blood type has A and B antigens. And the catch is, do they have any antibodies?
No.
No, so their blood plasma carries no antibodies. That's why getting AB blood plasma is kind of good, because you have nothing that potentially fights a possible antigen there. Okay, let's talk about Rh for just a moment. That was kind of the last thing we were looking at in here on Wednesday of last week. About 85% of the population is what we call Rh positive. And I believe I use the analogy of the flu, which is not a fun analogy really, right? So if you are positive for the flu, you have it, right? And if you're negative, what does that mean? You don't have it. Good. If you are Rh positive, that means you carry an antigen for the Rh factor. And so we may say that you are Rh positive. We may say that you have the Rh factor. There's a couple of different ways to basically say the same thing, that you have that antigen on the surface of your red blood cell. Now, what if we say you're Rh negative? What does that mean? You don't have the Rh antigen, right? So it's good news if you're like testing for the flu, right? If they say you're negative for this disease, great news, you don't have it. If you are negative though for the Rh factor, it means you don't have that antigen on the surface of your cells. That means you're one of the 15% of the population that does not carry an Rh antigen. So where this comes into play is with both transfusions and with pregnancy. I do want to mention, you know, the other day we talked about people in the ABO blood group automatically form antibodies against any antigens they don't have. So by the time you're 5 years old, if your blood type was A, what antibodies might you have already developed? Anti-B, yeah. Now, that is not the case with the Rh factor. If you're one of those 15% of the population that happens to be Rh negative, it takes either a transfusion or pregnancy, if you're a female, to build an anti-Rh antibody, okay? So if you're negative and you're 50 years old and never been pregnant, and of course never had a transfusion, then you're not going to have those anti-Rh antibodies. But for those who have been exposed through transfusions or through, say, pregnancy, then they may in fact develop anti-Rh antibodies. Does the Rh positive person carry anti-Rh antibodies? Does the Rh positive person carry anti-Rh antibodies?
Yes.
Do you feel strongly about your answer?
No.
Not sure? Okay.
That just means you
need negative.
No.
Right. So if I'm Rh positive, do I want antibodies to fight my blood type? Right, so that's the case. We don't have anti-Rh antibodies if we're Rh positive. What do anti-Rh antibodies fight? Rh, yeah. So you don't want antibodies to fight against your own blood type. So that means that if you're positive, you don't carry antibodies. If you're negative, you do have the potential for forming those anti-Rh antibodies. Okay, so let's talk about transfusions and pregnancy for just a moment. Let's talk about, say, positive versus negative, okay? If you're Rh positive, you can get blood from both positive and negative people. Why is it okay to get negative blood?
Positive and it's okay to get negative, right, because the negative doesn't have the Rh antibody.
good, that negative is in stealth mode, right? Okay, so there's nothing on a negative person's red blood cell that's going to cause alarm for the Rh positive person. Rh positive person's blood is looking for something that's foreign, and there's nothing foreign about being negative because there's nothing there. So exactly right. Good. All right, so if you're positive, you can get other positive blood and you can get negative blood. The problem arises for those who are the 15% of the population that are Rh negative. Why can we not give Rh positive blood to the negative person?
Because the Rh positive fights the negative.
Yep. Rh positive person will build anti-Rh antibodies. That takes time, but nonetheless, you have antibodies being built against that foreign antigen. And so the first time you have a transfusion of that positive blood into a negative person's body, what happens?
They would be fine the first time.
It's okay the first time.
They would build up antibodies.
That is right, yeah, it's called Rogam, something like that. That's right. So in this picture, you know, red blood cells are supposed to be pretty little brown, pinkish-colored, red-colored cells. And here you can see some have been ruptured, and that is due to these antibodies binding and attacking the Rh antigen on those cells. And the problem is that can go through your capillaries and into your kidneys, exactly. And if you're a mom, then that can cause problems for your baby as well. So the first transfusion is going to cause mild issues, and of course the second transfusion is a little more severe. Why do you think the second transfusion of positive blood into a negative person is more severe? That's right. Yeah. They got those anti-Rh antibodies built and ready to go. You give them this positive blood, and they're like, you've been here before. We didn't like you the first time, and we're ready to get rid of you the second time, right? So the second time around, we already have an army of anti-Rh antibodies built, and this time the reaction is much more severe. So they, if they are not sure what you are and it's an emergency, they don't take time to blood type you. They grab a blood bag, they make a transfusion, and they deal with the issues afterwards. If need be, if you are in fact negative and they did give you positive blood, then they'll give you an immunosuppressant drug to help prevent you from making our anti-Rh antibodies. Why not worry? Why just do the transfusion?
Well, because you're dying, you're
going to complain about blood. Keep you alive, right? Okay, what matters is we get those red blood cells circulating blood. That's going to matter over minutes to hours, right? What this is going to do is going to be something that takes place over hours to days to even weeks. So yeah, we've got time to deal with that immune system. What we want to do, you're right, is do life-saving. All right, so second transfusion is just like a second pregnancy. Let's talk about pregnancy. The issue for RH is not for the mom who is positive. If you go to your first visit when you're pregnant, they will blood type you. If you are positive, that's the end of the story. There's no more conversation to be had about your blood type. Okay, so if you're positive, do you carry anti-RH antibodies? No. So even if your baby is negative, are you going to fight your baby? No. Okay, so if you're positive, you don't carry anti-RH antibodies. If your baby's negative, there's nothing to fight there. You don't have antibodies anyway, so there's nothing on that red blood cell, even if your baby's negative. So this is not the issue. The issue is, if mom is negative, what does mom form when she has a positive baby? Antibodies, right, against those RH antigens. So babies are tiny, okay, and it takes some time for these antigens to sensitize mom. So if it's mom's first pregnancy, it takes time for mom to build an army of anti-RH antibodies. Just the same story as the transfusion, right? Okay, so why do you think the first baby is born with little damage, not great damage? Yeah, it takes time to build those anti-RH antibodies, right? So the baby may be born with some blood issues, maybe anemia, for instance. This baby may have hypoxia issues, meaning what? Not enough oxygen, right? So there could be some issues here for the first baby, but this baby may survive and have no problems. Here's the problem with any pregnancy beyond that. If we do not give mom a shot called a Rogam shot to suppress mom's antibody formation, the second pregnancy means that she's already got an army of antibodies in circulation. So here we are, mom is negative, mom has those antibodies. Second pregnancy, what happens to that baby's blood?
It starts clumping together and going into the baby.
Yeah, sure can. So second pregnancy, mom's antibodies are already there. Mom's antibodies are specifically made against those RH antigens. So we've got an ability to go ahead and fight and attack that baby's blood. So this time the reaction is more severe. That baby may be born stillborn, may be born with brain damage. So we've got a much more severe reaction this time around. All right, and so the name of this disorder that is problematic for mom and baby is called erythroblastosis fetalis or hemolytic disease of the newborn. And if you need the name of that, if you turn with me to page 30, about dead center of that page, there is your word, erythroblastosis fetalis, also known as hemolytic disease of the newborn. So is this disease here ever a problem for a mom who's got positive blood? Never a problem, right? So you can be A positive, B positive, AB positive, or O positive, and this will never be your case. But if you are negative anything, then this is going to be a concern. And so they give a Rogam shot at 28 weeks of pregnancy and again at birth. And the purpose of that shot is to suppress immune formation of those anti-RH antibodies. So just imagine going back 100, 200 years ago before they knew about all this stuff. Imagine being a negative mom and having a baby, the first one, be a positive baby. Maybe that baby was born and no problems arose and that baby survived. Imagine that your body formed these anti-RH antibodies and then you got pregnant a second time, again with an RH positive baby. Bingo. So maybe a miscarriage, maybe a stillbirth. It'd be okay, right. So this mom who's negative may have had a positive baby fine, maybe a number of miscarriages, maybe a negative baby fine, but every time she gets pregnant with a positive baby, here we go again, right? We got those anti-RH antibodies attacking, right? So imagine that, you know, imagine how the mom must have thought, what's going on with me, you know, all these miscarriages. They just didn't simply understand how this antigen antibody reaction works. All right, so how about questions on the RH factor, pregnancy, transfusions? How are you doing with that chart on page 31? Have you had a chance to look at it? We'll do as many together as you need. If you need the whole chart done, we'll do the whole chart. And then that way you have a starting point. Let me just say that this can be a starting point for learning blood typing, but you want to wean yourself off of this. There are 50 practice problems on the next page. You eventually want to get to the point that you do them without having to flip back to this page. I don't expect you guys to do all 50. If that's what it takes to get this stuff to click, then do them. But if you get to number 10, you're like, oh, I'm good with this, then stop, right? Okay, so, but you want to get to the point that you do not have to sneak back to page 31 to take a look at these blood types on the chart. All right, so let's start with page 31 there. Let's do A positive. Face value, an antigen box that tells you what we've got. So if you're A positive, what two antigens do you carry?
A and RH.
You carry A and RH. There's only three antigens that we have discussed over the past couple of days. There is antigen A, antigen B, and then an RH antigen. There is no antigen for O. There is no antigen for Rh negative, right? So if we're considering there's only three antigens that we're talking about, the only one we don't have is B. So that means that we are going to have
antibodies for B.
You got it. Good. Antibodies for B. So here's the catch. If I have an anti-B antibody, or even if I have the potential for making an anti-B antibody, I can't get blood from any type with B in it. Why not? So I would fight off that B blood type and destroy it, right? So we call that process of fighting and clumping agglutination. It's another word for a transfusion reaction, so we got to avoid all those B blood types. So let's see, who could I receive from if I am A positive? Good. A and O, yes. So we've got A positive, A negative, O positive, and O negative. So let's think about going into the Red Cross and saying, I'm here to donate blood, and I'm curious who I could give my blood away to. Obviously, if you walk into a donation center, A positive can give blood to A positive. So the catch is, whoever I'm giving my blood to has to recognize my antigens. So A positive certainly recognizes my own antigens, and who else?
AB
positive. Anybody else? Can I give my A positive blood to an A negative person? Because I'm giving them a
Rh
factor, yeah. Can I give my A positive blood to O positive people?
No,
O can only receive from an O. So I'm giving them my A antigen. So there's compatibility issues there with those antigens. Alright, let's try A negative. This time we only have which antigen?
A.
Got A. And we have the potential for forming what antibodies?
Anti-B and RH.
Good. Anti-B and anti-RH. If you're one of the 15% of the population, then that kind of narrows down your chances for who you can receive blood from. A negative can only get blood from negative people, and that limits us to two types. They are
A negative and O negative.
Yep, A negative and O negative. Blood donation centers would love to see negative people because they carry they don't carry the Rh factor, right? Yeah, they don't carry the Rh factor, and therefore they carry less antigens that could cause problems with transfusions. So when A negative walks into some place like the Red Cross and they say, I'm here to donate blood, they say, ah, we can give your blood away to four different blood types. Those are
A positive, A negative.
Good. Good. All right, so you can give your A negative blood away to people that have A positive and negative blood, AB positive and AB negative blood. So keep in mind, right now we're talking about that antigen compatibility. If I'm giving my A negative blood to an AB negative person, antigen wise, are we compatible? Okay, so if I, we're talking about antigen compatibility, and so if I give my A negative blood to the AB negative person, are our antigens compatible? Yeah, and that's what I'm concerned about. So that's why it's okay to give my A negative blood to an AB negative person. My antigens are compatible with theirs. I'm not giving them anything foreign, nothing new that they haven't seen before. Let's do B positive. You'll notice the pattern here has B and Rh antigen. An anti-A antibody. This person can receive blood from
a B positive and a B negative.
Good.
And a B positive and a negative.
Good. All right. So we got four types there: B positive, B negative, O positive, and O negative. So B positive can give blood away to, of course, B positive blood, and also to AB positive. Good. All right. Would you like to try the row for B negative by yourself? Okay, so for a B negative person, the only antigen you carry is B. What antibodies you have? Good, so those are the things that would be considered foreign to you. You would fight against those. We can receive from our negative types, B negative and O negative. And then, of course, you can give that blood away to B negative, B positive, AB negative, and AB positive. Say that again. You can give your blood away. Oh, I'm sorry. That should say AB, not A. Yep, so B negative, B positive, AB negative, AB positive.
Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and work on O. Let's see, we've got what antigens for an O positive blood type?
Just Rh, yeah.
And we have the potential of forming what antibodies?
Anti-A and anti-B.
Poor O positive, you can only receive blood from two blood types. They are
O positive and O negative.
But you can give your blood away to anybody that is
positive,
right?
So A positive, B positive. AB positive and O.
Yeah, if you said B and didn't say B negative, then...
Same thing, right? Just saying they don't have the orange.
Right, right. I think they probably do it just to be... Yeah.
It confuses me, that's why.
Yeah. But negative just means that it just doesn't happen.
Just doesn't happen, yeah. Which is weird because, like, you know, O negative, for instance, you don't have anything. You don't have Rh, you don't have A, you don't have B. Exactly right. You still would form antibodies to about everything. So if you're O negative, you carry or potentially could carry antibodies against A, against B, and against Rh factor. Yeah. So there's two ways to look at this. In terms of antigens, you have nothing, right? Okay, so in terms of your blood cells, you know, you're the perfect scenario. This is what blood banks want. But in terms of your blood plasma, and you're carrying these, potentially carrying these antibodies, then there is some risk associated with getting those antibodies. So there's kind of a double-edged sword there with O negative. It depends on what you want. If you want the blood cells with no antigens, or if you want the whole blood that can bring along those antibodies. Now, if you're O negative, what can you receive from? Just yourself, O negative, and you can give away to everyone. Good. I'm just going to put a note on there that we are looking at universal who? Universal donor. Done. We've got AB positive next. It carries all the antigens. And what antibodies might they have? None. Wonder why blood banks like your plasma. Yeah, you don't have any antibodies, so you know we can give your blood plasma to anybody and not give them any risk of agglutination there. We can receive blood for AB positive from four types, or actually more than that, from everybody, right? Okay, so we can get it from all the positives and the negatives. Why is it okay for AB positive to get AB negative blood?
What
The negative has no antigens.
And negative has no antigens, right. So AB positive can get AB negative. You're not giving them any antigens that are foreign. In terms of giving your blood away, though, if you're AB positive, you can only give it to
AB positive.
And so we call this particular blood type the universal
recipient.
Yep, good. It's the universal recipient.
So why wouldn't you be able to give it to just A positive or just B positive?
You're giving them
the
B antigens, yeah. Right, because if I'm giving them, whatever I'm giving them has to be something they've seen before. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's whoever, you know, who you're giving your blood to has to have seen all those antigens, and really the only other person that's seen all those antigens is AB positive, yeah. Well, see, AB negative is our next one, and the only antigens here are A and B. And what antibodies do we form?
Anti-RH.
And this person can only receive blood from those who are
negative.
Good. Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, I sure do. Okay, and this person can give blood to two types. They are?
AB positive and AB negative.
AB positive and AB negative. Okay, so, like I said, don't memorize the chart. Use it to help you as a crutch until you can work on that practice page 32, until you can wean yourself off the chart, and that's the comfort level you want to be at. Okay, what can I go back and clarify? Any questions I can answer before we move on past this? What's your sticking point right now? What's the most difficult part about this?
Negatives can only receive from negatives.
Correct. Negatives can only receive from negatives. If you had a choice, be positive, right? Because positives can get blood from both negative and positive people. Is it just practice at this point till you get it? Okay. If you need more practice Wednesday, we can hit this again, or next Monday, we can hit it then too. So just let me know what specifically I can help you with. All right. Why don't we go back to the beginning, that's page 22, and work on some of that intro content for this chapter. You probably talked about, you know, connective tissues, and one of the things you discussed when you talked about blood was the fact it's the only fluid or liquid connective tissue. Most of the time when we talk about connective tissues, though, we talk about these fibers like reticular and elastic and collagen fibers, and we actually have a category specifically for those kinds of tissues called CT proper or fibrous CT. We put things in there like dense regular, dense irregular, loose adipose, but we don't put blood in that category of CT proper. Blood is actually an unusual connective tissue. It does have fibers, but you know, as it's flowing through a vessel, you don't see strands of long proteins or fibers traveling through. The only time blood's fibers actually appear is when you clot the blood. So that's why it's kind of an odd, you know, connective tissue. It doesn't really fit the bill that the rest of those connective tissues do. So, let's go past that. We'll come back to that. Okay, so blood is mostly liquid. It's about 55% on average blood plasma. That is a liquid portion of your blood. And around 45% of your blood is formed from elements. And this is a fancy word that means blood cells. The majority of the blood cells that you carry are red blood cells, although there are some white and some platelets too. I know you all have talked about centrifuged blood and lab. I just want to repeat some of that topic. In the picture on the right, you'll notice the blood plasma has been put in a centrifuge, and the plasma spins to the top because it's more lightweight or less dense. The blood cells are dense, and so therefore they sink to the bottom of that tube. There's a buffy coat or buffy layer between the plasma and those cells. What does that buffy coat consist of?
White blood cells.
White blood cells, good. Anything else?
Platelets,
yeah. White blood cells and platelets in that buffy coat, good. So I think that picture looks more or less on target with about a little more than half of the blood being made of that plasma, a little less than half being made of red blood cells. Let's see, in terms of how much blood we transport, males transport around 5 to 6 liters of blood, and females have around 4 to 5 liters of blood. But on average, most people are carrying around 5 liters. So that's the number you'll want to know. On average, the human body has around 5 liters of blood. You'll want to highlight that, mark that number, and know it. 5 liters.
That's hypovolemic shock.
Hypovolemic shock, yeah. If you lose too much blood, then you go into shock. And so it's because you're losing blood due to hemorrhage, they call it hypovolemia. What's that?
Hypo below,
that's right. I just want to kind of give you a visual, you know, when you talk about liters of blood, you know, we kind of think of large volumes, but 5 liters really isn't all that much blood. In fact, a large male may have these 3 2-liter bottles worth of blood, and a smaller female may only have 2 of those 2-liter bottles worth of blood. So when you're talking about losing 10% of your blood volume to 20% of your blood volume, putting a person in shock, that is a very small portion of one of these 2-liter bottles. So shock means that we are losing too much blood to be able to adequately transport oxygen to those cells and tissues. So symptoms of shock include what?
Disoriented,
cold, clammy, okay, maybe not conscious, okay, maybe turning blue. So there's other reasons people may go into shock. You know, there's cardiac shock due to the heart, there's vascular shock, there's even septic shock, but this particular shock that we're talking about here is simply blood volume loss due to hemorrhage, due to bleeding, which either is internal or external. Another number to highlight and know is the blood pH, 7.35 to 7.45. On the pH scale, is that an acid or a base? Base, yeah, very slightly basic. Body temperature is, our, you know, 98.6 or so for normal body temperature, but notice blood temperature is a little hotter. We're all hot-blooded at about 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Blood temperature
of blood is 100.4. Yeah. So imagine if your blood was colder than body temperature. What would that do to your body?
It'd
freeze you, yeah, it'd cool you down. So by having body, or blood rather, that's warmer than body temperature, what is this doing to you?
It keeps you warm.
Keeps you warm, yeah, it circulates warmth. And we do know that vessels can dilate if you're too hot, help you to lose and radiate heat. And if you're too cold, we know those vessels constrict to help maintain heat. But this is basically how we stay warm, is we have warm circulating blood. Let's see, blood is thicker than water, and the term for that is viscosity. We know that the viscosity of blood is thicker. It's kind of a little more like maple syrup than it is like just pure water. The reason that we need fluid to help transport our cells is because those cells are heavy. You saw in the centrifuge picture back here that those cells tend to sink. And so if you don't have enough water to help circulate those cells, then they become sluggish and we can't get them moving through the bloodstream. So we gotta have the right ratio of liquid to solid components to ensure that our blood actually circulates. And that viscosity has to do with how thick or how sluggish our blood is. In terms of colors, we know that bright red blood is oxygenated and dark red blood is deoxygenated. What does it mean to be deoxygenated?
Deoxygenated means there's no oxygen in
your blood. Right, low or no oxygen, right. We actually perceive deoxygenated blood through our skin as being blue.
That's a trick of the eye.
It's a trick of the eye, good. So never ever is there a time when blood is blue. It's a combination of the dark red blood and the melanin of your skin. Good, so yeah, never smurf blood there. All right, so let's talk about the next part of our worksheet. There are three major functions of blood. What is blood helping us transport?
Oxygen, nutrients.
Good, oxygen, nutrients, carbon dioxide, good stuff like nutrients, you know, bad stuff like waste products. Pretty much everything that needs to be transported to a destination hops in the bloodstream for a journey. Let's talk about regulation. What kinds of things does blood help us regulate?
Blood pH.
Body temperature, good. Blood pH.
And water,
good. This is a good time to go back and pull on our hormones for just a moment. Can you tell me the name of a hormone that promotes water retention?
ADH,
good. And another hormone that promotes sodium retention? Aldosterone, good. So those two actually influence blood volume, okay? ADH and aldosterone. Number three there is about the protection of our bodies. What does blood protect us from losing?
Fluid loss and falling.
Good. From fluid loss, good. So blood can clot to help protect, of course, further blood being lost. And then we can also protect from foreign invaders, such as bacteria, viruses, other people's foreign antigens. So any of those things, then we can launch those antibodies and attack. All right, so let's now turn our attention to blood plasma near the bottom of your page. All right, so we're gonna take blood plasma first. It composes around 55% of your blood volume. That is a percent that I would mark and know. If you're asked what is the majority of our blood, it is the blood plasma. We know that formed elements are just fancy words for blood cells. Those blood cells make up around 45% of our blood volume. Anybody ever donated plasma before? Do you want to tell us about it?
That's when I was living in Colombia. Actually sell plasma.
Yeah.
Because everybody's just a room full of people pumping.
Mm-hmm. Pumping out one arm?
Yeah.
Pumping back in the other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get some money, yeah. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there is a place now in Second Loop Road that is doing blood plasma. So, a lot of times those plasma donation centers open up in college campuses because they know that college kids love some extra cash. They do pay for plasma donation. It's usually limited though to about every 2 weeks of donation.
How much money are we talking?
I've heard $50 to $100.
It's $100.
Yes,
$100.
$100.
$100.
Wow.
How much?
And everybody's gonna be sitting here going, this entire class is gonna show up. It takes time though, doesn't it? Like a couple hours?
$30 an hour.
Really? Do it fast, right?
It might take you a minute to get out of here.
Well, then you sit there for like 15 minutes after just to make sure you ain't woozy enough to take your vital signs and stuff.
And then they send you on.
Yeah, they send you on.
Wow.
With your money.
They pay cash. See, hey. The reason I wanted to ask you guys about the plasma donation is when they spin that stuff off, it actually looks like this straw-colored yellow stuff in the bag. You know, they give you back your red blood cells, and of course, they're not looking for those, they're looking for the plasma. The plasma contains some things that certain people may need, especially burn patients, and I wanted to talk to you about what is found in plasma that's not found anywhere else in your body. So on your worksheet near the bottom of the page there, there are these very important plasma proteins, and the first one there is a blank for albumin. When we talk about albumin, we want to think about blood pressure regulation. If you happen to have low albumin levels, maybe perhaps due to liver damage or liver problems, then people end up having problems regulating their blood pressure. So one thing Bio211 is great at doing is helping you make connections between organs and organ systems and other really important things like blood pressure. And so now we're starting to see, okay, if you've got liver issues, then you have low albumin levels. Low albumin levels can impact blood pressure. You can have low blood pressure. So albumin is a very important one. We'll talk about it occasionally throughout this course. Other important plasma proteins include these round, globe-shaped proteins called globulins. That includes those antibodies. We were just talking about those. You know, we make those in response to foreign invaders called antigens. And then we keep a low number in circulation at all times, just in case we're exposed to that antigen once again. Thyroglobulin transports thyroxine, and it too is found circulating in your blood plasma. We also contain clotting proteins in our blood plasma. The inactive form is called fibrinogen. It takes you rupturing a blood vessel for you to activate that fibrinogen into fibrin. Otherwise, your blood stays liquid. The only time it clots is when you've ruptured a vessel. So we should not expect to see fibrinogen except during clotting. Now, interesting, if you donate plasma and they don't do something to keep that fibrinogen in its inactive form, what might happen to that plasma you donate? So if you donate plasma and you give them fibrinogen and they don't do something to inactivate that fibrinogen, guess what happens to your blood in about 5 minutes? It clots, yeah. So they got to do something to inhibit that activity. All right. That should do it for that page 22. How about questions on that page? Let me take you to formed elements on the top of page 23. Did everybody get the attendance roster today? You didn't get it? I'll check you off. Anthony, were you the only one? Right. Top of page 23 has those formed elements listed from most common to least common. You'll want to highlight that. Red blood cells are the most common. White blood cells are the least common. let me go back to that centrifuge blood for just a moment. What I see when I look at a centrifuged column of blood is mostly blood plasma up here at the top. It's that straw yellow color. And then number two in terms of commonness in the blood is going to be your red blood cells. So if blood plasma is about 55% of your blood, those red blood cells are approximately 45% of your blood, and 1% is that buffy layer. So I know if you do the math, that doesn't add up to 100, that's 101. So what we would do is say, okay, if 100% minus 55, which is plasma, minus 1%, which is your buffy coat, so that's, you know, what, 44% red blood cells, okay? So what we're looking at is the majority of your cells being red in color, and actually very few being white or platelets. So that means that the majority of the cells that we're looking at are in fact erythrocytes, and that forms that hematocrit value. Okay, so in this picture, this kind of just reinforces what we've talked about. Most of our cells are in fact erythrocytes or RBCs. Notice only two white blood cells there and just a handful of platelets scattered in the background. So it just repeats what we know. The majority of our cell population are in fact red blood cells. So let's talk about those erythrocytes for just a moment. Their job is to be drones. All they do is pick up a blood gas, transport it, and drop it off. They have no brain, they have no nucleus, they have no way to repair themselves. So when they get worn out, we take them out of circulation and we replace them with a new one. Okay? So that's their job. Transport oxygen, transport some CO2. And they are confined to traveling in your bloodstream. Okay, since they're just little drones and all they do is transport blood in the bloodstream, we don't necessarily need them to escape and go anywhere else. They're going to stay inside those capillaries, arteries, and veins. So this is an interesting concept. Red blood cells make their ATP anaerobically. What does anaerobic mean?
Without oxygen,
right. And the process they do this is called glycolysis. This means that those red blood cells don't actually use their own oxygen to make their ATP. Why is that important?
Because they would burn out the oxygen before they got shorter.
That's right. They'd burn up their oxygen by the time they got to their destination. Imagine if you were delivering bread to a bunch of grocery stores, and imagine if you were really hungry and you just ate loaf after loaf of bread, and by the time you got to your grocery store, you're like, oh, hey, sorry, I don't have anything left. I was really hungry. I ate it all. They'd be like, well, don't you have anything for us? No, bin's empty back there. I'm done. I'll go back to the warehouse. Pointless, right? So it's important for us to maintain that oxygen for their cells and tissues and not consume it by the red blood cell. So red blood cells have no nucleus. Why is that important? Why is it important to have a nucleus?
Like cell division.
Cell division, right. What else does a nucleus help you do? Right, it controls what you do, right? It helps you replicate if you need to do that. It's kind of like the brain of the cell, and if you don't have a brain, then you're just a drone in circulation. So that's kind of interesting here, that these red blood cells are one of the few examples in our bodies of cells that don't have a nucleus. So they can't replicate, they can't undergo cell division, they can't repair themselves, you know, so they're just kind of in circulation until they get worn out and beat up, and then they're removed from the bloodstream. Red blood cells also lack most organelles, so they're really not cells that are meant to be rejuvenated and repaired. They're just going to circulate until they get roughed up, and then they're going to be taken out by the liver and the spleen. And so that takes about, say, 3 to 4 months for that to happen. They're also flexible. That means that they can travel through your very smallest capillaries by bending in on themselves and then emerging back and then kind of plopping back to their normal size. So they, in fact, can fold up on themselves as they travel through tight spaces, which is kind of a cool concept. They probably would, yeah, folding up on themselves like that. And you guys have talked about hematocrit in lab. Let's go back and hit that again. The hematocrit value is the same as the number of white cells.
Red blood cells.
Red blood cells, good. So the hematocrit is the same as your number of red blood cells. On average, we're looking at around 45% of your blood volume composed of red blood cells. Therefore, on average, your hematocrit value is about 45%. Now, it will vary for males and females. Males tend to have a little higher number, females a little lower. What accounts for that difference? Yeah, body size. Testosterone also plays a role here, so body size and testosterone tends to give males a higher hematocrit value. So let's think about that for just a moment. If hematocrit's normally around 45% and your blood plasma is normally around 55%, what if you're dehydrated? What would that do to your hematocrit value? Okay, so if 55% is normally your blood plasma and you're losing fluids, then you maybe have 50, 40, let's go dramatic. Let's go to 30% of your blood volume is fluid. What does that mean your cells are now? They're higher, yeah. So they're the rest of the ratio. They're like 70% of your blood volume. So that could be one reason for a change in hematocrit. I know you've talked about polycythemia in lab. What impact would that have on your hematocrit value? Polycythemia, is that too many or not enough?
Too many.
Too many. And that makes your hematocrit value also increase. So we're looking at things that can alter the amount of blood that we're circulating and that volume of red blood cells in circulation. All right. How about questions so far on hematocrit? Okay, let's do an example of a calculation. Okay, let's see. If you have red blood cells making up 39% of your blood volume, and we're always going to assume Buffy Coat's like 1%, then what does that mean your blood plasma forms? What percentage? 60. Yeah. So those two added together are 40%. Blood plasma, you're right, is 60%. Composes 49% of our blood volume. Always assume that Buffy coats a 1% layer.
Always?
Always. Yeah, assume Buffy coats 1% always. What is your hematocrit?
50.
Yeah, so those two together, plasma and Buffy coat, make up 50%. That means the other 50% is your hematocrit value. Is this mirror imaging what you've done in lab?
A small portion of it.
Simplified.
Yeah.
Do you want to do another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
She throws total weight.
We're calculating
all that into it.
Oh, like body weight?
Like total weight and then from grams to kilograms.
Yeah,
and then all that.
Oh, okay, that's like way more complicated.
Yeah, we're doing it the hard way.
Okay. There's one in your lecture test. It's just like one of these. I just want to make sure you're comfortable getting those numbers kind of parsed out. Let's say that the red blood cells make up 35%. What is your hematocrit? If your red blood cells are 35%, what is your hematocrit?
35.
Easy, right? And then just to kind of finish out the rest of it, your Buffy code is always 1%. And then looks like our blood plasma is what percent? 64, yeah. So that gives us pretty runny fluid blood.
Yep.
Need another one? Okay. Let's see, Buffy code, don't forget about it. It's always 1%. Even if it's not part of the problem, just know it's in there. Know it's a 1% contribution. Let's say that your blood plasma is 44%. Can you tell me your hematocrit?
65.
65.
That look about right? 55% for your hematocrit value. And then hematocrit is just another way to say how many red blood cells, right? Okay. Need any more of these? Just one last thing to finish up this page, and that is hemoglobin. We'll do that, and that'll be in for this page. Hemoglobin, of course, is a red blood cell's protein that transports oxygen and, in fact, some CO2. If you can remember the number 4 for hemoglobin, you've got it made, because hemoglobin happens to be a quaternary-level protein, meaning it's got a most complex structure. In fact, it's made up of 4 separate polypeptide chains. There's 2 on top called betas and 2 on the bottom called alphas. And because they are globe-shaped chains, they're called globins. Hey, there's part of the name, right? Hemoglobin comes from the 4 globin chains. Now, each globin chain contains a heme group with an iron molecule. And there's the rest of the name. Hemoglobin comes from 4 heme groups in 4 globin chains. It is that iron molecule inside the heme group that binds oxygen and transports it in a bright red state. Now, you can transport, of course, some carbon dioxide. It doesn't bind the same seat as oxygen, so there's no competition there for those two to ride on the same seat. So on your worksheet, there's a blank to fill in. The magic number here for hemoglobin is 4. 4 molecules of oxygen can be transported by hemoglobin. Yeah, just trillions upon trillions. So why don't we talk about page 24. We'll start there on Wednesday. We'll look at blood disorders on Wednesday. Bring me any questions you guys have about blood typing or hematocrit calculations. Thanks.